Blog Talk Radio.
Song ran longer than Ronda Rousey's last fight. Right? That was, we were already off to a rip-roaring start. This is Open Mouth Say Shit, the off-season version of In Much Less Detail, the podcast. On a Saturday night, July 19th, 2014, I'm Dre, he's Jay. We are back. We've been away for a month, and we're getting ready to get back into the football season starting next month. Training camps are opening around the country in the next few weeks, and it is almost that time. But we're in midsummer, we're in mid-July right now, so in the American sports world, that pretty much means you're in one of two places. You're either geeked up for the All-Star festivities for baseball, or you're bored out of your freaking mind and waiting for NFL training camps to open. So either way, Jason, there's a lot on our plate sports-wise, as always.
Yeah, it's been an interesting summer. I mean, if you can call it summer. I mean, we haven't had much of a summer up here in Wisconsin. It's been awfully cold. I know it's weird hearing that because it's the middle of July, but yeah, we've had days in the 60s up here, and that's not quite normal for the summertime. So
I was about to say, define awfully cold.
Well, you know, one night in the area, we had 30s one night.
Oh,
yes.
In July?
So that, in July, very strange. They were breaking all kinds of records for lows over here. Very strange summer. This is, of course, following up the crazy winter that never seemed like it wanted to end, where we had 30, 35 below at night. So it's been interesting. Sports-wise, not so interesting. I did not get at all into the World Cup. You know, I don't know how you were on that, but I fairly loathe soccer, even though it feels like they're trying to ram it down our throats at every opportunity. I mean, we have joked about that in the years past about ESPN when they suddenly acquired all the soccer rights, how every day on their top 10 plays, four of them had to be from random soccer matches. For a moment, it's like, wait a minute, I know there's better things that happen than some random soccer highlight. But
yeah,
yeah,
there'd
the
be like four awesome.
Happened.
The top five would be like four awesome basketball dunks and alley oops and everything like that, and then the number one play would be some long distance soccer kick. And it's like, what? That was number one, really? I don't get it. But yeah, that's how the world works. When you get the sport on your network, all of a sudden it becomes extremely relevant in your eyes.
Yeah, so it happened. It was there. You know, I work around television, so it was on. I saw things. There was guys running around on green fields up and down and kicking a ball around, and yeah, didn't really care about it at all. A couple people, you know, at the job where I work were somewhat into it. I don't know if they were just into it because it was on and it was more interesting than what else was going on. But nothing happened too exciting. And, of course, you know, for being a baseball fan, I don't think either one of us are too excited about our teams this year. You know, your White Sox haven't been – they've been up and down, but, you know, they're probably not going to contend. And then the Cubs are just blowing up everything because they are basically clearing the decks trying to start this whole thing over from scratch. So it's been that – I've expected it, but it's still not fun to watch.
Oh, I'm sure it's terrible to watch.
Yeah, it's hard to suffer through. So the only thing you can hope for is that there's a purpose and there's a goal and that they're accumulating talent. And, you know, we got to believe. But in the moment, it's really, really hard to stick through that. So the life of a Cub fan is rough. But
you got to stick through it.
Yeah.
because
and you,
it's
you only understand
happen.
That if you're a Cub fan. You only understand it if you're a Cubs fan.
No, I definitely get it from looking from afar as a not a Cub fan, but as a very close Cub observer. Yeah, it's torture. It's just because you've seen so many other previous regimes say that we've got the answer, we've got the magic answer that's going to turn it around. It's going to happen. This is the year. You got to believe in Dusty, we trusty, et cetera, et cetera. And then you look back and you're like, okay, what was all of that about? Because it didn't work at all.
And I will say, you know, I'm not going to try to bore everybody who listens to us by talking about minor league baseball, but with the Cubs particularly, being the fan that I am of that team, and you hear about all of these guys that they have down in the minors. I remember growing up as a Cubs fan, you always heard about the one guy down in the minors because their farm system was always crap. So you always heard about the next Ron Santo. You know, it was always like the new third baseman who was going to come up, and we had to go through like Kevin Ory and all of those guys. Or, you know, Mike Harkey comes up, like the great pitcher. But it was always one prospect. It seems like now you're hearing about like 7-8 guys, and every single one of these guys is killing it down in the minors. So that's the only thing you can get excited about. You know all 7 of those guys aren't going to pan out, but if 3 or 4 of those guys or 2 or 3 of them come up and perform, takes a ball club that's mediocre and makes it better, makes them a contender.
Right.
So,
and that's the entire
look
point.
Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah. That outfield is disgusting. All 3 of those motherfuckers are just beasts. But yeah, that's the point. That's the whole point of the rebuild is you get, you know, however many top prospects you can in your system, knowing that some of them aren't going to become the stars that you hope, but assuming that some of them will just because of the law of averages. Yeah, you can go down the list of all the great hopes that the Cubs had coming up throughout the years. You know, Corey Patterson, Felix P.A., Gary Scott. You know, that long list of guys that this is the one, this guy, when he gets here, this guy, you know. And, you know, they all had varying degrees of success. And now with this new plan that Theo Epstein is working, the general manager, let's just flood the system with as much top young talent, young and cheap, as we can. And whoever wants to play their way up, plays their way up. And whoever needs a little more time to develop, we'll give them all the time they need. And that, I think that's really the only way you can do it. This is the winning way to build an organization in 2014. That doesn't mean they're going to win the World Series necessarily, but this is the only way to do it. Because what's your alternative? Go spend more money on expensive free agents like Alfonso Soriano, Nomar Garciaparra, all those other guys that didn't work out. You don't want to go through that again. So this is the way to do it. It is torturous to watch, but hey, those young kids, when they get here, most of them from their minor league stats, from their profiles, from the scouting, looks like they're going to just be awesome, and you can only hope that they're nearly as good as what they seem to be. And then I've got an extra perspective being down here in Memphis and actually seeing some Iowa Cubs AAA action. And I can tell you just from what I've seen that some of those guys that they've been talking about, yeah, they look like the real deal. I saw Javier Baez, the shortstop, he took one swing and I said, oh shit, that's the dude. That guy, he's got a power stick from the shortstop spot. He may not stay at shortstop, but yeah, he's the real deal from what I've seen. Arizmendi Alcantara was the second baseman. He's now up in the major leagues. He looked like the real deal, you know, not as much of a power stick, but he looked like he knew what he was doing out there. He had great – he looked like a baseball player. He has great makeup from what the scouts say. Got some speed to him. Yeah, these guys – and then Chris Bryant, I haven't seen him yet, but apparently he's just been destroying everything in his path. So, yeah, the future looks very, very bright, as bright as maybe any – team in the major leagues right now, looking at their minor league system. I don't think anybody can touch what the Cubs have down in the minors. So as much as it might pain you to say, oh, here we go again, wait till next year, maybe in 2 or 3 years, this actually looks like it's not bullshit. this actually looks like in 2 or 3 years the Cubs are actually going to have a very good baseball team. So it is something torturous to go through, but at the same time, this time it actually looks like for real.
Right. This time we mean it, you know. Okay. No, but I'm with you now. And you know, considering you're the man on the farm, you know, down there. So
right.
You get to see these guys. I mean, you know, it's interesting because you go to the Cardinals AAA games and you do the scoring for those games. And it's interesting that, you know, you're telling me about guys before they come up, you know, and it's interesting to have that perspective because a lot of times you don't see the guy until he makes the major league debut. So you have no idea who this person is coming up. But, yeah, all you hear about are these Cubs minor leaguers. I hope it works out for them. But after their dump trade of Samardzija and Hamill, you just know it's going to be awful the rest of the year. And they're admitting that. I mean, they'll just come right out. You know it's just about, hey, you know, that Addison Russell, the prospect they picked up from Oakland, the shortstop prospect, who I know about because of my deep involvement in American League fantasy baseball, and of course Dan Straley, the pitcher. It's like these are good players. It's not like they're not dumping players for garbage. They're like you said, they are just accumulating, and they're getting deep at single positions. Like they have Starlin Castro at short. Well, they have Baez. They have this Russell. They're putting themselves in place that if they need to move some of these other pieces to just keep getting better, when your team is awful, just keep accumulating as much as you can because something's got to stick. I'm all for that, but, you know, patience is not an easy thing when you have to sit through 162-game seasons and probably two or three more years of these before there's something that's going to really come to fruition. So, yeah, it's been a month since our last show. Last time we talked about LeBron James getting knocked out of the NBA Finals, and lo and behold, he's running back to Cleveland, which I think is a great PR move. But it felt more like a PR move than a basketball move. That's just my quick take on it. I don't know how you felt about that.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I sit. Although I'll say that I'm not exactly sure what his other options were going to be, because it felt like the end of the Heatles. When that finals ended, walking off the court, I said RIP Heatles, and because it just felt like it was over. And then the news comes down that the big three had all opted out, you know, Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, and you're just assuming that it's because they're all going to take these humongous deep pay cuts to keep the team together and give themselves financial flexibility to go out and bring in a fourth member of the big three, make it a big four, maybe Carmelo Anthony, maybe somebody else. That's going to take the load off of the big three because obviously the big three can't handle it anymore, especially Dwayne Wade, who looked like he retired in the middle of the season, didn't tell anybody. And then it all winds up breaking down because LeBron makes the decision, part two, and his decision is to go running back home to Cleveland. And he didn't just run back home to Cleveland. It's really interesting. I like LeBron James a lot, but the first decision, you get the big talk show. You get the big setup with Jim Gray playing the Johnny Carson role, sitting there doing the big interview in front of all the kids at the YMCA, and he breaks all their hearts on live TV and breaks the hearts of Cleveland on live television. And that was just strange. That whole thing was bizarre. This, the way he did the decision part two, to me, is also a little bizarre. This whole big layout in Sports Illustrated and this big announcement, dude, what happened to holding a press conference and saying, I've made my decision, I'm going back home to Cleveland, I will or I won't take questions either way. You don't have to take questions at those things. What is it about LeBron James that makes him think that making an announcement the normal way, just holding a press conference or, you know, just in front of a microphone, maybe leaving the practice facility or what have you, I'm not exactly sure why he thinks he has to have every decision that he makes be this big grandiose production. You know, there's so many LeBron haters out there that have, you know, they hate him for reasons that don't make any sense. But then he does things like this that sort of gives them ammunition to hate them. But I don't really understand why he had to go through the big Sports Illustrated, you know, as told to, you know, like he's writing something in a diary explaining his love for Cleveland and why he had to come back home and all that stuff. You know, it's great. It's a sweet story, but that whole thing just reeks of PR, just trying to get everybody to love him again because he had the black hat for 4 years. He was the bad guy. He was, you know, the NWO Hulk Hogan. He turned on the fans and he played the role of the bad guy. And he was sick of playing the bad guy role because that's not really him. He's not a bad guy. He did not enjoy that at all, and now he's going out of his way to try to paint himself as the good guy and paint the halo around his head. And people like me that respected him for doing what he did before, you know, not the way he did it with the TV show, the decision, but just the decision to leave Cleveland, an organization that, you know, completely crapped the bed, had him, had a chance to build around him, couldn't build a good team around him, had 7 years to do it and couldn't get the job done. You leave that to go somewhere that you have a great chance to win titles. It was the right decision all along. He won two titles. He lost two. He got to the finals every damn year. He was down there in Miami. It was obviously the right decision. Now to go back to Cleveland and make himself the good guy because he missed Cleveland so much. Cleveland, this Northern Ohio, that has his heart. That's where his heart is. That's where his family is. That's where he bled. That's where, you know, everything happened for him, and now he treats Miami as 4 years of, like, he went off to college, and now he's ready to come back home, learning whatever he learned in Miami. You know what you learned in Miami? You learned how to win titles. You're not going to do that in Cleveland. It doesn't matter what you learned in Miami because you can't apply it to the Cleveland Cavaliers because the team around you still pretty much sucks. And so, yeah, PR move, basically, because he's not going to win any more titles in Cleveland, at least as far as I can see. Unless they maybe acquire Kevin Love, that might change the complexion of things. But if you're going to do that, then why not stay in Miami and acquire talent around there in an organization that you know can acquire talent around you and can actually put a winning team around you instead of giving that idiot owner in Cleveland another chance to screw things up around you?
Yeah, the whole thing, you know, I can be cynical. The whole thing felt manufactured. It was almost like it was his only option if he wanted to repair the damage that had been done by the decision. You and I, when the decision happened, it was too bad we didn't have this show back then, because that was some great material that provided us for quite a long time. I always joked about the beginning of the show on ESPN, Stuart Scott sitting there, and ESPN has been pushing this with commercials and highlight packages and everything, and the first thing out of Stuart Scott's mouth is, "Can you believe all this hype around this decision?" You know, and I seem to remember you equating that to, like, getting robbed in a violent, you know, and having the robber saying, "Can you believe the violence in this neighborhood?" while they're holding the gun in your face. And this was all put together, manufactured by ESPN and LeBron. And like you said, it was the right decision, but it doesn't sometimes matter what you say or what you do. It matters how you do it and how you say it. And he created so much animosity, which probably was great for the NBA because there was no middle ground with LeBron anymore. You either loved him or you hated him. People wanted to see him lose in the finals. They were just as happy as the people who were out there to see him win. Now he's going back to Cleveland, and are they an instant title contender? No. Are they a playoff team? Yes. They'll probably, you know, because the East is generally not that great every year. You know, 500 gets you in, and LeBron by himself could probably win 41 games with no help. I mean, you got that team that was crap to the finals 5 years ago, so there's a reason for them to think that they can contend, but not with the pieces that are around him there right now. And obviously, as soon as he got there, all of a sudden you hear about them trying to package up Wiggins and other players to bring in Kevin Love. So they know they need to get better and get better fast, because they'll just look at that team and go, wow, we got to fix this, we got to fix this now. LeBron's not getting any younger.
No. It's just strange to me that you're in a place where you, in Miami, where you already admitted that you had to go somewhere and bring other superstars with you to create a big, you know, team built around three superstars and a bunch of role players. And by leaving that to go to Cleveland, you do all the PR to make yourself look like the Messiah. You become the first person, I think, in the history of the world that chooses Cleveland, Ohio over Miami, Florida for any reason whatsoever. You know, so good on you. You know, Cleveland loves you again. Akron loves you again. Fine. Then immediately here come the rumors about they're going to try to package guys up and bring in Kevin Love. Well, if you got to bring in superstars to make yourself a title contender, again, why the hell don't you just stay in Miami? You already did it. You know Pat Riley can build the team around you because he's actually done it. I don't trust the Cleveland Cavaliers for anything. I don't care how much he loves Cleveland, Ohio, how much he loves Northern Ohio. I'm sorry. This is a legacy. You have a chance to be the greatest player in NBA history. You're one of them already. And once again, you're going to trust your career in the hands of Dan Gilbert and this band of merry twits. I don't quite get that. I wouldn't have made that decision, but I'm not LeBron James, and there's certainly pressures and things going into that decision that he had to consider that we probably don't even know anything about. And so, you know, what's done is done, and Cleveland once again is relevant in the NBA, but I don't think they're any closer to a title than they were when LeBron first left them 4 years ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're not a lottery pick team anymore. They'll win 45 to 55 games, maybe better, who knows. You don't know what putting that one superstar on the team will just do to everybody else. Everybody else is going to be more open. Everybody else is going to have better looks. Everybody else is going to, you know, be able to function better within any offense because LeBron's just going to attract so much attention. So there will be guys who were just guys before and now will suddenly know who their names are. They'll just be better because they're on the court with LeBron James.
So yeah, that's true.
You never know. You'll see. I mean, I'm not a big basketball guy. That's probably about as good of basketball analysis you're going to get. Some of those guys have tremendous upside potential.
Thank you, Doobie Brown.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
We talked about names in the baseball organization and the Cubs organization that could come up to be great players someday. You know, those guys could all come up and become all-stars. They could become the next Josh Harrison. They could become the next Eric Ibar. They could become the next Derek Norris. Okay, who the fuck are these guys? This is what the All-Star game is now? Who are these people? I've never heard. What? I'm a baseball fan. I love baseball. I haven't heard of half these people on the All-Star game. Who's Alfredo Simon? Pat Neshek? Tony Watson? Who the hell are these people? The All-Star game is whack. I watched maybe 2 outs of it, not even a whole half an inning. I just there's no juice there anymore. Charlie Blackman is an All-Star? Who? I don't know who these people are. I don't care. I don't know what. Seriously, what? Ah.
Okay. All right. I got to talk you off the ledge here. I knew who everybody was that you mentioned, except for Watson. I don't know who he is. I did not watch any of the All-Star game. But I at least knew who was in it. Of course, I know all the AL guys, so I know who Eric Ibar is. I know who Derek Norris is. I know who Alfredo Simon is, or Simon, depending on how you listen to it, because he came over from the American League into the National League. But he was garbage in the AL, if I remember correctly. But he went to now he's in Cincinnati, and he's won a ton of games. He's probably a deserving All-Star, but I remember back when the All-Star game was just the best players, even if they were hurt, they would get voted in. And Here's my fundamental problem with the All-Star game. You need to eliminate the rule where you got to have one player from every team. Right there.
Oh, the traditionalists are going to get mad.
I know, but this is how you end up with the loogie out there. You know, you end up with the guy who's like, you know, the loogie, of course, for people who don't know, means lefty one-out guy. This is just the lefty in the pen who comes in to strike out the lefty, and then he gets yanked. But he's really good at his job, and that guy, because everybody else on your team is shit, that guy gets into the All-Star game. That's how you end up with middling relievers like Pat Neshek in the All-Star game. The rule needs to go away. It needs to be the best players. Football, for as crap as their Pro Bowl is, I don't think you have to have a player from every team.
But I think I got to disagree, because I think this thing with the loogies and the middle relievers and the setup guys and all that, I think that's a new phenomenon, because this wasn't happening 10, 20, 15, 20, 25 years ago. You heard of the All-Stars back then, even if it was the last guy on the worst team in the league, you still at least knew he was the best player off that team. This thing with the setup, Pat Neshek is a St. Louis Cardinal, which I wouldn't have known unless I'm just looking, you know, at the All-Star page right now. The Cardinals had plenty of All-Stars already. They didn't have to have him on the team. Why is Tyson Ross on the All-Star team? You can find other Padres, even though the Padres aren't very good. You can just take the closer, Houston Street, and, you know, he was having a great year. He might have been on the team, I'm not sure. But this thing with the middle relievers and the middle infield, Josh Harrison is so mediocre and nondescript that he earned the title of this podcast. Who in the blue hell is Josh Harrison? I don't know who he is. And just because he has some versatility and plays a bunch of different positions and puts up decent enough numbers, they decided to throw him on the All-Star team. You talked about, I'll bring us all the way around. At the beginning of the podcast, you talked about the Pittsburgh outfield, and you talk about three young studs that are just, they look like they're all going to be monsters for the next 15 years. Josh Harrison of the Pittsburgh Pirates made the All-Star team. Not the other two. Andrew McCutchen, obviously.
Starling Marte and Jose Tabata didn't make the All-Star team. But
Tabata's kind of crapped out. The other guy that came up now is Gregory Polanco, and he looks like he's going to be a monster.
Now he came up fairly recently, right? Not that long ago.
Yeah, I believe. Right, he was one of those after May 31st call-up guys. But he's mashed ever since he got up there. Now, there's no argument to put him on the All-Star team. I'm not saying that. My point is, you overlook some studs on a certain team because other guys on that team are kind of mincing around playing different positions, and they can play third base, and they can play shortstop, and they can play second, and they can do all these things, and we're going to ignore that they're actually not very good at baseball. But they are versatile. So now we're going to put them on the All-Star. Why are these guys on the All-Star team? I just don't get it. I do not understand it. Dellin Betances made it out of the bullpen as a setup guy. Nice season. I understand that. But if he wasn't a Yankee, would he be an All-Star? I don't think so. So that I had to get that off my chest about the All-Star selection process. It's just, I think there's something flawed with it. I'm not sure if it's the picking someone from every team thing, because we had that when we were kids, and yet somehow we still managed to have heard of all of the All-Stars, even though they still had to pick somebody from all the teams, even the craft teams. So I don't know what the solution
right
is exactly.
Then.
Yeah.
They got it right.
I didn't think it was that hard.
Was a spectacle. You wanted to be in the All-Star game. I don't care. I love baseball. I don't care about the All-Star game anymore. Just don't care.
Not in the least.
Nothing to me. Didn't even watch it.
We are out of time on the live show. You want to stick around as we go blue, we turn down the lights and get a little naughty in the after show. To hear the after show, you have to subscribe to the podcast. Just search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast on iTunes. We will see you on the other side. All right, moving into our after portion, 15 minutes of after show. And Jason, we have some interesting things to talk about in our after show on this particular podcast.
Yeah, you get to turn, like you said, we're turning the lights down. We'll put on some, a little bit of Marvin Gaye. We had this conversation a long time ago. I was telling you a story about, I subscribe to a major satellite TV provider. There's only two, so people can flip a coin and figure out which one I have. And I'm sitting on the couch with my daughter next to me, sleeping on the couch in her little pillow because she was, I don't know, 6, 8 weeks old. And I'm flipping through the channels on my satellite. And I get through the movie channels because we had free preview weekend for, like, Showtime and all that. And then I hit the end of that, and I suddenly get into the dirty movie channels. And I'm like, oh, God. And not only do the titles of these movies jump out at you because they're so bad, but then the sanitized descriptions that they put on there for these movies, because they're trying to say naughty things, but they can't really say the naughty things because this is the program guide that anybody can watch. So we had this conversation. We said we wanted to talk about it on the show. So I went through and I did my research. Me and Pete Townsend were doing our research together. if anybody gets that reference, good for you. You'll have to look at it. Google it.
That's a legit excuse. It's legit.
It's legit, yeah. You know. I was doing research. I wasn't actually watching the movies. I was just reading the titles, and my wife thinks I'm crazy. She's like, this is horrible. I'm reading the title, and she's upstairs, and all you can hear is me giggling downstairs because of these titles. And then the descriptions are so bad. So I took 10 of these, and I notated them, and I will read them now to you. And I'm sure you will love these. I will first read you the description of the movie, and if you'd like to play along, you can then try to guess the title of the movie.
All right.
Because I know you're creative, because it turns out that none of these are creative, that they're just so base. It's basically the description of the movie is the title.
Right.
So I don't know who thinks of this stuff. So here's the first one. And these are all horrible. Here's a movie for you, and I'll read this. I'll try to read this as interestingly as possible. Number one, my stepsister is not only smoking hot with a perfect rack, but she's bisexual too.
And you want me to guess the title of a movie with that description?
Yeah, I'm curious to see what you would think of would be the title of that movie.
That sounds like something which the title would be My Smoking Hot Sister 14.
Oh, well, you're very close. The title of the movie is My Bisexual Slutty Sister Shows All.
Ah, okay. Yeah, you're right. They're not very creative with these.
Here's number two. Totally greedy for wild, smutty sex. These dirty moms and daughters, G-spots, are wet and lubed. It gets better. Tight and lust-craving sex-starved bodies writhe in oversexed frenzy. They have to penetrate themselves.
That's the funniest part of it is when you get to the end of all of that and you don't say they have to fuck themselves because you're trying to somehow keep this clean because you're on cable. You're trying to protect the kitties, so you don't actually finish this off with something actually descriptive, right. Like fuck themselves. No, they have to penetrate themselves. They have to keep it delicate.
Of course. Yes.
That sounds like it would be mom and daughter get wild 12.
Well, I like how you're throwing the numbers on all of these. No, this is this is horny moms and slutty little daughter.
Oh, okay.
Great, you know, great movie, I'm sure. Oh, boy. Number three. Ever hear of a yogasm? Have you, Andre? Have you ever heard of a yogasm? Well, we met We met a group of smoking hot girls practicing naked yoga who were more than happy to show us what it is and how it's done. Check out all the sexy yoga action.
I guess I'll go with sexy yogasms 5.
No, it's hot naked yoga. And honestly, I'm guessing this is the first and only of the hot naked yoga movies.
No, that's not true. There's a sequel to every porn movie. In fact, there's 15 sequels to every porn movie.
Okay, so number four. This is going as well as I thought it would do. Number four. It's okay. They're not related. That's a great start, by the way. It's okay.
Oh, dear.
They're not related, and the sexual temptation was too big to ignore or resist. There was an unquenchable thirst for a rock-hard pole, and he certainly gave her one.
That sounds something like my naughty stepfather 6.
No, it's much better than that. It's, oh, my God, my stepbrother took my innocence.
Darn it, I was so close. I had the right familial relation, but not the right member, so to speak.
Oh, and now here's something a little more timely with the current events. They are timely with current events. So here we go.
I love it when they try to get intelligent with you.
And I want to see if you pick up on this one. Beauties from around the world play with balls and devour rods. But the title is ingenious. The title is ingenious.
I'm going to guess World Cups 14.
World Cup soccer sluts. Very good.
See, they weren't even as creative as they could have been. They should have played off the bra size of, you know, World B Cups or World B Cups or something like that.
Yeah, I know. And then, you know, the World Cup's been going on for decades. You'd think they'd throw some ludicrous number on it, like World Cup soccer sluts 19. But that's
apparently I'm in the wrong part of the porn world here. They're not dealing with all the sequels like I'm used to seeing.
Yeah. Number six. You'll like this one. They may look ready for retirement, but these raunchy grannies still have fire in their holes.
Oh,
and they
good.
Get stuffed on camera. And they get them stuffed on camera for the first time. There's no limit to what these old babes will do to get off. This is great. Here we go with the sanitized description. See them bang and swallow seed.
Oh, my God. Well, you can't accuse them of having naughty words on the screen. Bang and seed are in the dictionary.
That's right. You do not see vulgar next to the word seed.
That's right. However, I don't want to watch anything in which holes are on fire or whatever that description said. That sounds like something about, you can't be a MILF if they're talking about granny, so that sounds like something about GILF Get Wild 25.
GILF
No, it's just Granny goes bareback.
Oh, well, good for Granny.
Here's one with a number, finally. I'll give you one with a number.
Ah, good.
In fact, there's two numbers in this title, and one of them I will give you right off the bat. Watch number 7, by the way. Watch 8 superstars get their faces covered with massive loads of cream. Now, you would think that could just be like an infomercial for beauty product, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's Oil of Olay.
Yeah, especially when you hear the title, because this could be on QVC, too.
8 Fantastic Facials Part 12?
8 Warm Creamy Facials 3.
Oh, that sounds so gentle, too. Warm, nice warm facial. My wife might want to order that. She's very much into beauty products.
See, you could just say you're doing research.
Uh-huh.
Number 8. There's only 3 more of these left to go. Number 8. She caught him peeping on her big boobs. But instead of turning him in, she's hitting her back and begging for his pull, of course. Busty amateurs are grinding on hard meat and begging for hot loads in real sex tapes.
Mm. So it's got to, I would think the word real is somewhere in the title because, of course, you're still not being creative. So, you know, Reality Sluts 15.
It's even worse than that. The title of this movie is Are You Spying on My Boobs?
That might be worth it just to see if they ask that before every single scene. Is that the jump off point of every scene where the woman looks up with this physical look and says,
"Every movie could be, are you spying on my boobs? I'm here to deliver pizza."
And then the music starts, and then the action
begins. This is the hardest one out of all of them because this is more about the title than it is the description. Because the description is number 9. Rough and raw is the way to go. I know I'm not giving much there because the title is just gold.
Maybe is the title Rough and Raw?
No, the title is even better than that. It's Split Me in Half, F Me Deep.
That's awesome. That's actually kind of creative.
And here's the last one, and this comes from a long line of these types of movies. And we actually have a literary character in this one. Number 10, and the final one, Zorro uses his long, hard sword to swashbuckle his way out of danger and into busty maidens.
Usually for those, they come up with something in the title that indicates that it's not actually Zorro as a way to try to avoid lawsuits. So it's something like, this ain't Zorro the porn film or something.
I will give you it. That's, the title is, It Ain't Zorro. Also, while I was scrolling through, I found It Ain't Game of Thrones, which is... You know, I guess you can just take anything now. Instead of coming up with a porno title like, you know, Game of Bones, come on, guys. You come up with It Ain't Game of Thrones. It Ain't Zorro. Just put It Ain't now in front of anything. The first one of these I ever heard of was a few years back with It Ain't Avatar XXX.
Right.
But apparently now this has just creeped up now into a whole industry of just take the title of a movie, put It Ain't in front of it, and now you've got yourself a porno. But you can still call the guy Zorro.
Wait, you got to give me that Game of Bones line again so I can test if this sound effect works.
why don't they call it Game of Bones?